Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Coin Geek Weekly live stream where I shave my head once every 5 weeks so you can see your reflection in my forehead. How's everybody doing? I'm Kurt Walker Jr., rocking and rolling here at the South Florida Bitcoin Citadel, the hottest place in the Southeast or something. Actually, it's funny, like a big chunk of the country has been hotter than Florida all year. Now, I'm from the Midwest and I've had a lot of old friends be like, oh man, it's like 100 degrees. How bad is it there? It's got to be worse, right? You're closer to the equator. And I'm like, it's like 89, like kind of breezy. So it's been a good year. I was not on the hurricane side of the state for the last one. So I've been all set and basically just rocking and rolling. We're about to get to the extra nice part of the year where it is about 80 degrees until Christmas. And then on Christmas, it drops just a little bit for about 2 weeks before going back to 80 for another 3 months. And then summers are about 90. So if you haven't yet moved to Florida, I don't know what to tell you about it, frankly. But it's a good time if you like 350-ish good days a year to go outside and have a good time. So if that's you, I don't sell real estate. I don't really care. But if you wanted to come hang out, work out, do the fun stuff here, it's a good time. And if you're watching live, you could like, subscribe, hit the alert bell, and let the world know that you are a CoinGeek Weekly live stream fan, friend, family member. You can tell them whatever you want, frankly. Just let them know that we're live and you're a viewer. So do that. That would be good. And truly, the like, subscribe, and hit the alert bell stuff, that actually does really help us because you know how the big tech lizards are. They only allow you to get your voice out if you are giving them delicious ad revenue. So let them know. Let them know that advertisers should be advertising on the show. And if you yourself have a company or a product and you would like to advertise on the show, I'm still taking bids for a tattoo on my face. And we can also have significantly cheaper logos that float around in the overlay over here. So if that's you, please reach out to Mr. Alex Moon. He was born in 1989, so his screen name is Alex_Moon89 on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now. So reach out, let him know you would like to give him money so you can put your logo on the show somewhere. Also, yes, Alex Moon reminding me, I am supposed to get a Craig Wright tattoo somewhere on my body. I think I said I would do it for $50,000, so bids still being accepted. Go ahead and make that happen and I'll make it happen. Maybe we'll stream it live. Yeah, we're gonna have to put up a GoFundMe or whatever, however you do these things. So let's get it done. I don't know. Where do we start? So, okay, we are going to have one of my favorite people in Bitcoin. He's an old timer in the sense that he's been around Bitcoin for a good while. And but he's quite a bit younger than me, so it's not fair to call him old, but Ari Cucci, who if you've ever watched the other time we were on the air together, I found out how to pronounce his last name live on the air and started out a pretty good interview between him and Craig. But I've known Ari for, I don't know, probably 5 years or something now, and we used to talk a whole lot, like literally every day for a long, long time, just about like incentives and Bitcoin economics and all kinds of cool stuff. And I think we bounced a lot of really good ideas off of each other that have turned into all kinds of other things that we're up to now. So pretty cool stuff. We're going to have him on after we play the ad. So if you want to be on the ad next week, reach out to Mr. Moon. But until then, you got to watch the ad that is playing.
This is buybsv.com, the quick and simple way to buy Bitcoin SV. You can't miss it. It says a quick and simple way to buy BSV on buybsv.com. It's safe and secure. Within an hour, you'll own BSV digital assets, which means it's so quick and simple. So if you want to buy BSV, use buybsv.com. It does exactly what it says.
What's up, Ari?
Hey, man. Good to see you.
good to see you too, man. So let's go through a few of these. I'm trying to think what the thing you were working on when we first, it must have been Sharkpool.
No, I think it was before that even. I think it was the Kryptonized retail shop and
yes.
The Order Anything service.
Yes, I think it was.
That was the first thing.
So I was at Crypto Traders Pro at the time doing their fundamentals, and I did a video review of Kryptonize It because at the time I was trying to do a can I live off of just Bitcoin for 1 year? And it was basically impossible. I think I failed in the first month. But I mean, I genuinely did do a lot of things, and Kryptonize it was a big part of me being able to do it well. So that was
People were paying for the craziest thing with that service, like literally medical bills, their utility bills, their rents, tickets, anything imaginable went through that service. I was really surprised at some of the products that people were buying.
I'm sure. Well, because you were basically running like an exchange, and you were paying their bills in fiat, right? Is that the okay?
Yeah. So basically, the order anything service was you could order anything online at any store. So you just went to Amazon, basically. You went to a product, you went to shared it with the order anything service. It went to your shopping list. At the end, you checked out, but the only thing different was that you were paying with Bitcoin, or in that time, Bitcoin Cash. And in the background, we had a system where basically we exchanged that Bitcoin for fiat and made the payment in fiat to the retailer. So in that way, the retailer didn't even need to accept Bitcoin itself. Like, they were being paid like they were used to. And on the other hand, the Bitcoiners that really wanted to use it as a currency weren't able to do that.
No, it's great. Were you using like BitPay in the background, or how were you facilitating that?
No, we actually built like a whole thing because you know, at that time it was when BTC split off. So one of the main concerns that went around were the double spending issues that might arise at bigger blocks. Zero confirmations was supposedly not safe. Now, I knew that all of that was nonsense. So we built the system in the back end ourselves in a way that we could detect double spends. We also ran a challenge back then. I don't know if you can remember that challenge of like, people were like, no, you're insane, you can't do that, zero confirmations isn't safe, people are going to scam you, etc. I was like, okay, good. Look, if you're really not convinced that you can scam me out of credit, out of gift cards, Amazon gift cards, then let's do the following. I'll put up a gift card worth $1,000, but I'll price it at $2,000. Yep. Because you're not paying anyway, right? You're double spending me. So double spend me and get that $1,000 gift card for free, basically. I'm hereby declaring that I'm not gonna press charges or anything. Yeah, you can keep it. If you can manage to double spend it, you can keep it. But if you don't manage to double spend it, you just spent $2,000 on a $1,000 gift card. So it's a risk, you know, like it's a risk and reward thing. And people like to gamble, and apparently somebody did like to gamble. And I have to tell you, those were the most nerve-wracking 40 minutes of my Bitcoin career, when that payment came in and I was waiting for that first confirmation to actually go through it. I was looking in the back end, like there was nothing odd going on, or at least like he was trying but it wasn't working.
That's funny.
But like when that first confirmation came in, I was like, yeah, like it was actually proven in practice that it could be done, or it could be safe. Before that, like theoretically, I already do it, and other people do it. But like this,
did you actually have to mail it to Greg Maxwell?
No, it was an automated system. It was an automated system. So like you paid for it, and you instantly got the card.
Oh, it's like digital. The digital Amazon. Okay,
that was the whole thing. So like you could, if you could really double spend me, you could have definitely gotten the card for free. I mean, rumors were that it was Peter Todd. I don't know if it was Peter Todd. but like it could have been. I don't know. I do know that he went quiet.
Right, it's like, damn it, that's funny. It's funny because I completely forgot about that wallet too, and I used it all the time. So that's,
it was a good wallet. I mean the thing about the wallet was that we were trying to make it like work in the SPV way, and the way that the paper described, obviously those services weren't available and are still not available purely due to economic factors. I mean, it's just, there's no need for it. So like, obviously, the infrastructure isn't there. Although some people are really trying their best to waste money on infrastructure that's not needed, sure. But it's still not there, even though they're wasting it like hand over fist.
What do you think is the problem? So me and you had that conversation with Craig. It's got to be 2 or 3 years ago now, where you kind of had like, here's how SPV should work, was basically the title of the thing. Yeah, you guys talked for 2 or 3 hours. And I think SPV is very clear how it should work and why we might use it or whatever.
It's not rocket science. Like it's really crazy. It's crazy that people overcomplicate things, and they overcomplicate things because they're trying to anticipate what the market needs. They're trying to anticipate what companies might need 5 or 10 years from now. So they're building hypothetical solutions to hypothetical problems that are going to be encountered by hypothetical companies. In my mind, it's crazy. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of resources. But I mean, it's not my time. It's not my resources. You guys go ahead.
Sure. So what do you? It's funny because it's one of the things, one of the major themes of my show. And basically, every time if I get interviewed on anybody else's, you know, I go on crypto podcasts all the time. I'm like, what do you think crypto needs? I was like 99% of the people that do anything in the crypto space at all are either fools or grifters or outright criminals or whatever. And there are very, very few actual money-making businessmen outside of, again, the crooks. Like, they're like, it's like, oh, yeah, no, how'd you make your first $1 million? Like, well, I did a lot of cocaine trafficking. And you know, I was like, well, yeah, sure, that's an option. But it's the same thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I made $10 million selling JPEGs and rugging everybody. And I left with their Bitcoin and I laundered it out of Binance. And now I live in, you know, Malta or whatever. So,
yeah, I mean, can you really be proud of that? Like, is that really something as a man that you can be proud of? But again, like looking around at all of these crypto dorks, that became millionaires, they're literally dorks. Like, they look like dorks, they act like dorks, they think like dorks, they're beta as fuck, and it shows in their products and in the way that they're trying to run their businesses, which is not running a business at all. It's just bugging people.
Yeah. So how do we get real business? Like, you're one of the only real business people I know, like, who can actually make a dollar in the real economy. And there's like 12 of us, I think, that actually.
honestly, that's not even like an exaggeration. I think that's totally on point. How do we get more people in? I think we get more people in by publicly being successful utilizing the chain. So like for a long time, I don't want to say mistake because for a long time the goal that we were trying to reach with Bitcoin and the network was different than it is right now. It's really, really all about plumbing now, and that wasn't the case for the past 10 years. So the approach needs to be different now. But I think that's the only way that we can actually attract more economic activity, is by showing that the economic activity that's taking place on chain right now is actually sustainable, has good margins, and is inviting to new entrants. If we can show that, then we're good. And I think, you know, all of the public stuff that we're seeing, I obviously, like, all of that is nonsense. All of those announcements and partnerships, and I don't know what's going on, but like all of that we've seen that in the past doesn't really work. Like, it sounds good, it looks good, but at the end of the day, what matters is transactions on chain. What matters is sustainable transactions on chain. And nobody has managed to do that up until now, but I do think there are a couple of people that are honestly on the brink of doing really, really great things. And that's like completely outside of the Bitcoin world, outside of the BSC world, outside of the crypto sphere, and just utilizing the chain for what it is, utilizing it for the utility and not some I don't know, like using it for things other than speculating on price or even having anything to do with Bitcoin, the coin itself.
Sure. Well, and that's really interesting, because I've told people the same thing. Like, you can use Bitcoin as cash. I like the Bitcoin Cash ethos. Like, you know, Roger Ver goes to his favorite hot dog stand in the Caribbean or whatever, and you know, he's like, "Well, here, can I get you a sticker? It'll be great." You know, and he's like,
"Honestly, Roger did a great job at that." I mean, Roger and me. butted heads in numerous occasions. But he really did a great job at just bringing Bitcoin to the people, just like having it everywhere. Like the goal back then was having it treated as a currency, being used as a currency, and that opportunity was there in 2017. And that opportunity was huge. That interest was huge, but we blew it. We simply blew it.
Yeah, I agree.
So there's no going back. There's no point in trying that again. It's not going to work anymore. We as the internet people say, we need a new meme. but that's not going to be use Bitcoin as a currency because it's just not suitable.
Here's a really good question from Brandon to you specifically. Do you think that the plumbing aspect of things is more future proof than Bitcoin as a currency? It sounds like currency might be dead.
I think the plumbing is going to make Bitcoin a currency. The plumbing is going to stabilize the volatility of it. The plumbing is going to show that this is a sustained economic system, which is transparent. So like there's no cheating. You can see the things that are happening on chain. At least as far up to a certain point. And I think if Bitcoin is used sufficiently as plumbing, that'll give the foundation for it being used as a currency. And even then, it's still going to be a hard sell, because why would you use a currency that increases in value? Why would you not use a fiat currency, which will definitely still be available? Like, there is no future where fiat doesn't exist.
So what do you think of CBDCs? I think this is probably the most divisive, because you get these people who are like, hey, it's a token. If it goes on BSV, it's good for my bags. And then you have the people who are like, no,
it's not good for your bags at all, because like, well, why would it be good for your bags? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Anything that's built on Bitcoin is not necessarily good for your bags, because most people that I know that actually want to use it for its utility are doing it in a way that is not going to have any influence on your bags whatsoever. I mean, look at Solana. Today, the news broke that Visa was processing millions of transactions a day with Tether on Solana.
Yep.
The price, like, there's literally no difference. So like, actual utility doesn't matter at all when it comes to price. So forget all about those dreams of like, oh, they're gonna pump my bags, because that's just not what's gonna happen.
So do you think the world we're looking at? It was funny you shared this this morning with the black guy crying about how his bags are worthless, and the yes Chad just yessing at him, but. Do you think that's actually the case? Was it okay? Nice. Is it possible we live in a world where there's 8 billion people that are using BSV and the price is actually $5? Because you're the king of the $5 meme.
Bitcoin would function perfectly fine at $5, be it that like with 8 million participants or 8 billion participants, doesn't really matter. I even think like having that price at those kinds of levels and having it stabilized at those kinds of levels draws away all the attention from like the speculation aspect of it. And there still might be then some speculation in it, but it will be regulated speculation.
Sure.
And I think that price stabilizing at that point would make it way more usable for every day than the prices that we're seeing now.
Okay, so I think while I agree that it could work at five, it could work at one, it could work at a penny a coin or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that it will? Like the way the economics bear out, if there's that many people wanting to use the asset, mm-hmm. do you think that that's
I don't think people are going to want to use the asset. I think people are going to want to use services that are built on the network. Services have it for this asset. But these services will not be buying these assets off of exchanges. These services will be having SLAs with guys like yourself, the miner. I will be sending you transactions directly. You will be invoicing once a month, and I don't give a fuck how you take care of it in your back end. That's how it's going to go.
So my bags are worth nothing.
I think people are gonna and it's gonna be a good thing. Even the CBDCs, if they're on Bitcoin, that's an amazing thing, you know. And it's going to be terrible at the beginning. Why? Because we're suddenly going to see how all of these laws and regulations actually play out, because now suddenly things are recorded immutably and people can actually see the cause and effect of things. And I think that's going to be a major realization to people, that we have too many laws, we have too many regulations, and we need to step back on those. And I think having all of that on chain, yes, it will hurt, it will hurt in the beginning, but eventually it will be for the good of all of us if we go that route.
No, I mean, I can't agree more. And that's actually always been my kind of retort on people who are like, hey, this is going to bring in, you know, this crazy authoritarian, you know, panopticon monitor everything. And it's like, yeah, I get
bring
that,
it on.
But we already live in that, for what it's worth. Yeah. Okay. So
yeah. It's just, you know, not transparent now. So like, right. It'll just get better. First, it'll get better for the people in control and in power, because suddenly they have more control and more power. But after a while, you'll see that the people that are affected by it are going to clearly see what the cause is of their everyday problems. Sure. And that's, as you and me both agree, I think most of the time the government interfering in things that they should not interfere in.
Correct. So, okay, here's a really great question, because I think we're both in a pretty good position to answer it. What is Bitcoin's greatest meme?
But I mean, what's Bitcoin's greatest meme? Purely like a meme, like the HODL meme is obviously most successful one, because like that is still the mantra of people. Yeah. And clearly, that is something that has that made us lose in 2017 and made them win. So that meme was extremely powerful.
Yeah, good answer.
What about you, though?
Oh man, I mean, that's a really good answer. I think decentralization, and it's sort of related to HODL, but like, this
user activated soft fork,
right. That oh no, we're all hyper capitalist, but also we can't trust the miners. And you know, I live in my mom's basement, and if it costs more than $60 to run a node, you guys are, you know, killing Bitcoin or whatever. But just I think everything that falls into that meme, that it's so schizophrenic, but so successful at the same time.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and that goes like for a lot of things in the crypto sphere. I mean, I get that we are trying to appeal to governments, to regulators, to actual businesses, and I get that takes serious people doing serious business, and I'm all for that. But I think we shouldn't discredit what's going on in the rest of the crypto sphere, because clearly that's what's gaining attention, the attention of people. So if people really want NFTs and pictures, and just, it's really more about these communities. These people just have nothing to do all day. They just want to sit on Discord, have like a handful of friends that they can talk to all day, and buy these useless NFTs and talk about that, because they have nothing else going on. But if that's what people want, like, who are we to stop them, or who are we to judge them on that? Just let's make it easier and more fun for them to do on Bitcoin than like what they're doing right now.
Sure. What do you think of, like, if you look at the way you can put up another question, Mr. Moon, if we want to keep these going. I'm not paying attention to how many questions have come through, or we have like 90 questions about Ari's mustache. So it's from Charlie. So here's, hey Ari, you are a successful entrepreneur, or are you a successful entrepreneur in the Bitcoin space? What project are you working on now, and what projects are you most proud of?
I think success is measured in a lot of different ways. So it depends on what your definition of success is, if I've been successful or not. I would say I have been, in the sense of that my goal was always to look for the edges and push beyond that and try to show things by actually doing them. And maybe I didn't always do a great job at that, but at least I tried. You know, when it comes to, I think the follow up thing was like the thing that I was most proud of. I think that has to be the Order Anything service, because that was, you know, BTC split off. The whole argument was, we're a currency. No, we're not a currency. And the Order Anything service was basically just a way to show that it can function as a currency. You can literally buy and pay for anything in Bitcoin, no matter how small or big the purchase is, if you really want to. And I think that showed that. And I used it as a tool, like, for to show a lot of different ways how merchants could use Bitcoin at that point, because that was what the focus was. Nowadays, I'm not that much involved in Bitcoin or blockchain in general. I'm doing a few projects, like you saw the videos that I started putting out. I started a few projects, about 2 or 3 weeks now. It's actually going really well. Today, I got an agreement to test out one of the things at an actual potential customer. So it's going like really fast. And the whole thing is, just do it. Just pick up the phone and call people up and have conversations with people.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying. The essence of that is what I'm trying to capture on those videos. So basically, that's the project that I'm working on right now.
No, it's so important. I mean, I say it all the time, and probably not every single episode, but I've been saying it consistently for years. Cold call. Like, if you don't have customers, you need to call and ask somebody to become your customer.
It's hard, Kurt. It's hard. Like, I remember I was 20 years old. I had my first job as like a junior project manager at some shitty company selling ads. You're like, for 9 hours straight, you're getting a no. You're basically feeling humiliated. Like it's all negativity. I literally had days where I woke up, stood in the shower, and I was crying because I knew, like, this is like, it's funny now. It wasn't funny then. Like, I was literally crying because it was so fucking hard, but I still did it, you know? Yep. And now I don't have any issues with that. You know, now when things get hard, I'm like, just because shit is getting hard is not a reason to stop. Like, that's not the emergency for you to stop. And just continue doing it. It's
funny. I actually used to do the same thing. I had a cold call center that was walking distance from my house growing up. And as soon as I was 18, like, you couldn't work it before you were 18, but I turned 18 and went over there, you know, a week later basically, and said, "Hey, like, I'm pretty good at talking. What's this job like?" And it was hell. It was such a, like, it's slave brutal. Ship. Yeah, it was like, it was literally like, you know, the manager walking up and down cubicle aisles. Like, you know, you're banging.
You were like afraid if it was like walking past you and you were not making a call.
It's
like,
right. Yeah. And it's like hundreds of calls a day. It's like a 99% rejection rate or something, you know. You actually get someone on the phone, and like half of that time they're just going to screw with you, or they're completely not qualified to even be a prospect. And then every once in a while, like, you nail one, like every 2 days or something, you find somebody who's like, "Oh yeah, that's exactly what I need," you know.
Exactly. But that's how you figure out, like, you know, like the 200 calls that you did prior and that people were laughing at you or just like hanging up on you, like, they don't matter at all, because this last person that you're talking to doesn't know that you just had 200 calls like being laughed at.
Right.
Like, he just genuinely finds it interesting, and he's like, "Oh, this sounds like an interesting thing to do."
Right.
Or to buy or to whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really important trait that a lot of people are missing, especially in the tech industry, because the developers are used to being alone, sitting behind their laptop or computer or whatever, and just like not interacting with people. I think that's also just a generational problem as well. If I look at like young guys are like afraid to step up to girls and talk to them because they're used to like fucking texting all day and doing things digitally. Like, I'm not used to that. Like, text used to be 25 cents a text. Like, I didn't have the money to be texting all day with girls. Like, I had to like physically go to them and like talk to them.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the ROI was terrible.
I mean, it was crazy. And like, internet was like, you know, fucking everything was horrible back then. You had to physically do something. And the same way with selling, like, you couldn't just have ads on Google or YouTube or whatever the fuck. You just literally had to pick up the fucking phone and call people up. That's it. It's a numbers game. And that's with sales in any type of business.
Yeah, just a numbers game. Sure. So to that, here's another question from Charlie. asking what are your recommendations for building a successful business? I mean, obviously sales is key, but you know, what the hell do you do with somebody when they say, cool, sell me something?
Well, sales is kind of interesting because most people think of sales as like a separate thing that you do. To me, sales is actually the thing that you end up doing naturally if you properly validated your idea. So if you want to be successful in business, I recommend you to watch my videos because those are amazing. Secondly, all of those videos are about and will be about validating your ideas. So the simplest thing, just start validating them, start calling people, see if actually the problem is in the light that you're seeing it, if they're encountering it in the same way, ask them how they're solving it right now. See if the solution that you have in your mind is actually something that might work for them or not. Adjust based on the findings that you have, and then slowly but surely you end up talking to people that you've been talking to for weeks because you were validating your ideas. Now, right, these people end up being prospects at the end of the tunnel because they've been with you through the entire journey. And those are the people that are going to be your first customers. Those are the people that are going to be your first sales. And based off of that process that you went through, that's how you structure your next sales funnel, because you went through that process in a stretched amount of time, in a 3 weeks' time. Now you have the knowledge to actually structure this in a way that you can push people through that funnel way more quickly, actually get in more sales more quickly. But that's something that you naturally end up with if you actually validate your ideas. But most people don't do that at all, and just start building stuff and then wonder, why is nobody using it? And sometimes in Bitcoin, it's even worse. They already know that there are no customers for it. They already know there's no market for it, and they're still building it. And
right.
Yeah. Yep.
No, it's crazy. Well, it is. It's such a shallow pond in so many cases. I've had people... because I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. Same thing outside of Bitcoin. Like, I've worked in construction and management. I've worked in hospitality. I worked in broadcasting. I've done everything. I had somebody about 6 months ago ask me about, like, how do I get into real estate? Because they know I've successfully, you know, done a little bit of that. I'm not like a real estate mogul by any means, but you know, I told them, I'm like, well, what kind of money do you have on hand, or like, do you have an investor? Do you have an? And it's like, oh no, I don't know. Maybe I've got $8,000 in the bank or something. It's like, well, okay, so you're not really in a position to be a real estate investor, but like, let's scale that idea back. Like, what are things that people need and they need to pay for, and can you rent it to them or whatever? Yeah. And so, you know, it starts to turn into, hey, you know what? Like, maybe get good at doing, like, what's something you love? Do you love music? Like, can you identify rare record albums or memorabilia or these things? Like, get into like flipping, like that kind of thing. Like, learn to talk to people, learn to hustle.
The whole thing is just do it. It doesn't even matter what it is. The process is always the same. It's like, I have an idea to do something, call people up that are in the situation that you would interact with them if you were actually doing what you have in mind. And if these people don't want to talk to you, then apparently what you have in mind is not suitable for what just think of something else. It's really not that hard. It's really just a matter of doing stuff.
No, for sure. Mr. Moon, let's bring up a couple more questions. I see you got like seven of them starred, so we'll meander through them. Do you guys think that some of these older companies that are now out of business have a chance to be revived when BSV and or the blockchain generally hits critical mass?
What do they mean? Like older companies, like Bitcoin companies that
yeah, presumably Bitcoin companies. So like,
well, they've died out because they were economically not viable. You know, like a lot of this stuff was economically not viable. And I've been very loud in the past about economic viability of projects and saying that it's important to think about that, to actually use services that you're sure of are still going to be up a year from now. We've seen that countless of times. So do I think any of these businesses could be revived at scale? Sure, probably, but not in the way that they were set up, because clearly that was not economically sustainable. They were all depending on grants, subsidies, somehow making it basically free for the people that are using it, which really doesn't make any sense, because then the incentives just don't align anymore at all. It just doesn't work like that, you know. So I think would services like Unrider had work? Definitely, you know that because you're offering similar kind of services with Gorilla Pool, so you know that you could make it economically viable, just not in the way that he was trying to do.
Right. Well, yeah. For Unrider, his stuff was all cost. For us, it's the cost of doing business in the mining industry, and so we have all this data now. That's just something else we can sell as part of the business. But I think a good example to Brandon's point. Or business being ahead of their time, that kind of thing.
No, it's not ahead of their time. They're just being moronic with their economic model. There was no market research then. There's just no business model behind it. That's the problem. It's not ahead of their time.
It's like owning an oil well in 1700. Like, it's basically worthless because the rest of the global infrastructure doesn't exist. Now, they were right about oil, but they were 150 years too early to benefit from it. So,
benefit from it in the way that we know now, but they could still benefit from it in the way that they could back then.
Sure.
You see?
Yeah, they could sell lubricants and things. Yeah.
The market back then was different. So, like, you could still use that resource for something that's actually usable right now. It's the same thing with Bitcoin companies right now. We've seen countless of companies being funded, getting millions and millions and millions of dollars in funding, and ending up building stuff that nobody's looking for because they didn't do any market research. They're just building stuff. It's random acts of software. It's fucking it's ridiculous.
That is an awesome thing. Like, I am definitely
committing
stealing
random acts of software.
Oh,
it's just,
man,
like literally like programming into the void. There's no point into it whatsoever. And all of these resources could have actually been used to do something that's useful right now, you know. Sure. So it's a shame. It's a shame that things went the way that they went. But like, again, it's not my money. It's not my time. Like, do whatever.
Oh man, Ehrlich Bachman. Some say if a new app doesn't go viral in 24 hours, it's a failure and should be abandoned. What are your thoughts?
Some are retarded. That's not how things work. I don't know if this some who this is talking about ever heard of Twitter, that like fucking muddled around for 5 or 6 or 8 years or something like that before it actually went viral, before it actually gained traction. All of these overnight success stories, they're fake. That doesn't exist. Overnight success only exists in the eye of the beholder. The one that's actually doing it knows that this is an accumulation of work that went in it for years and years and years on end. It's never a thing that happens overnight. It only happens overnight for people that are looking from the outside, people that are justifying their uselessness because they haven't been doing the work for years, and you're so lucky because it just happens to you. No, I'm not lucky. I actually worked for this. I've been working for this for years. But people don't see that. So no, this statement is absolutely nonsense.
No, it's funny because the most recent example of that I can think of is Threads, the Twitter competitor from Instagram. And I think they got 50 million users in 24 hours, but we're about 2 months away from their launch. And I think they've had like a 95% drop in usage because people realize there's nothing new here. So
exactly. The only people that are still have an account, or the only reason that people still have an account, is if you want to delete your account, you're also deleting your Instagram account. People don't want to delete their Instagram.
Oh, those bastards. Zucked again.
He's not dumb. You know?
Right. Yeah, it's the if you die in the metaverse, you die in real life meme.
Yeah, I mean, could have been.
So, from Andreas, do you agree with the Matrix Bitcoin meme where Morpheus says, when you're ready to sell, you won't have to?
I mean, that was
that's an old meme.
Yeah, that was applicable back when we thought that and when it was very achievable for Bitcoin to be used directly as a currency, directly as a means of exchange. I don't think that's still the case. So no, I don't think that meme still has any relevancy for what we're trying to do now with the network.
Yep. Beautiful. What are the largest barriers to the mainstream adoption of micropayments?
Usefulness. I think people think of micropayments as actual payments. I never think of micropayments as actual payments. To me, they're transactions. And those transactions can mean anything. Those transactions can be different types of signals than monetary signals. And I think thinking of use cases in which it doesn't involve any monetary exchange, but it involves an exchange of intellectual property or information in some other way, micropayments definitely make sense. It's just that people haven't come up with them yet.
I still think, you know, for me, I think about micropayments exactly that. Like, I have no desire to send somebody a fifth of a penny, right, you know, in order to do business with them, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think the one that always makes people take a step back. So when I'm in front of a room full of critics, and I do this pretty often, where people will bring me in front of a bunch of like gray haired men who think the blockchain is useless, and I will typically explain the Certahash cybersecurity product. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain to them, like, look, here's how a criminal steals your data and then wipes logs. Mm-hmm. And if you can no longer wipe logs because you're making a log on the blockchain for a 1/10,000th of a penny every time there's a log change, then you get an alarm the moment something has been reversed or attempted to be reversed. Now, all of a sudden, you got alarm bells that might save you hundreds of millions of dollars because you learned about them instantly instead of the typical, which is like 18 months later when your stuff ends up on the dark web.
Exactly.
And then you see them go, oh, right. Like it's one of those things where, but that's a real business, right?
That's the perfect example, because that's also the example that I happen to use. I don't use that company specifically. I just use it as an example that you can store all of these logs immutably somewhere and make sure that they can't be altered, they can't be changed, they can't be deleted. They're always there, because the first thing that an intruder does is of course, like, making sure that either you can't find any traces of it actually having occurred, or just like swiping everything off making you like completely lost. And with a solution like this, it's definitely something that micropayments come in very handy.
I think it becomes immediately obvious, and it's monetizable, because it's a great idea, but it's also a great idea that, so for specifically, Certahash is a company and a product. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody has a thing where they're like, man, how can I stop this crazy thing from happening? There's a business there. Like they're one of the only examples of people that are out there getting customers.
Are they actually getting customers?
Oh, absolutely.
That's great. It would have surprised me if they wouldn't have. Like they should be knocking on doors of like different types of vendors and like go through the entire supply chain of the tech industry, basically.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of players in there, and like anywhere that you can put in your solution is a good place to put in your solution, because everybody down the road makes money off of it.
For sure.
You have like a lot of surface area to cover. So it's a great market to be in. And good to hear that they're actually having business.
No, they're some of the only people I know that do the cold calling, and then they do they do conferences. So Brian Doherty is one of the members of the team. And he'll put together a cybersecurity education conference in Washington, D.C. And then he gets 100 people to attend because he offers them a free lunch. But these are guys that are, hey, I'm the CISO over at like Comcast or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he gives a 45-minute presentation. You go, holy shit, this actually solves my problems.
I mean, that's the way to do it. You know, just get in touch with people, give them what they want. Everybody's looking for an excuse to get out of the office and not be in the office. So if you're like having an event where you're having free drinks and free food, and it's relevant to your field, and you send out 1,000 invites, surely 100 people will show up just because they don't feel like working.
Right. Yeah. It's R&D, boss. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, I've done that often.
For sure. All right. Here's one from Project Babbage asking, will micropayments reduce the economic friction of certain previously non-viable business models, like on-chain social media, that are currently non-viable due to the lack of supporting infrastructure? I think we just kind of answered this one with the cybersecurity product, but
yeah, and I think
what else could be out there? Yeah.
The way the social media on-chain should work has nothing to do with micropayments and shouldn't be in the way that people are trying to do it now. I think the added value of social media on-chain is found somewhere else and not in actual payments themselves. I think the actual value is found in owning your digital property, legally owning that, not owning it on somebody's protocol that's closed off that you can never reach if they yep. go bankrupt, like actually owning it with a sovereign digital verified identity, legally owning it. Even if you lose the keys, it doesn't matter. You can prove that you legally own it. It can be always reversed or in some way retrieved. I think that's the game changer when it comes to social media and blockchain is about ownership.
Yep. No, it's funny. You're one of the guys who, you're old friends with like Siggy and guys like Luke who come up with these like, okay, here's an identity protocol and here's an ownership protocol and here's ways that other people can prove that you're the one that owns the identity and like all these other things because exactly that, like Twitch, I was a big fan of Twitch. I would be if my login worked anymore, but the problem is Twitch, while partially using open data, also keep you inside of Twitch.com. I think what probably should happen is you use all these open data protocols and you have a client that allows you to actually just post to Twitter, which I know Twitch kind of did, but you still don't actually own the data back and forth. And it gets convoluted as to what you actually own or what you're actually doing, when in reality it's that data ownership and having a stack of protocols that allow you to leave Twitter without leaving your friends and your clients and all these other things. Right.
Right.
It's just crazy to me.
It should be a pool of data that's encrypted with your identity, and you should have different types of clients for different types of people. So if you're like a very Christian person, you might want to use a client that only shows you Christian-related messages and nothing else, because you want to protect your kids or your wife or whatever it is that your goal is. And if you're an anarchist, you might want to have different types of content. So like anybody can do whatever the fuck they want to do and nobody's bothered by it. Like that's an ideal world to be.
Yep. All right. Next one. Why is your X handle Ari off chain? Would you use a blockchain social network so we can see Ari on chain?
I would if there was like an actual good one out there, then I would definitely use it. So far I haven't seen anything that would meet my criteria of a good social network.
Good answer. What are your thoughts on Lou locking or this whole locking coins meme?
I have no thoughts.
What do you think of Jack Lou, Ari?
Who the fuck is Jack Lou?
Oh man, this is great. This is going to make the best reels that we've had in a few weeks for sure. What's the difference between locking one Satoshi in an ordinal and locking X amount in a script with data attached?
I don't know.
What do you think of ordinals in general, or like token protocols, all this kind of stuff? Do you think it's all just is this all nerds arguing again?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter whatsoever. Like it's the same as like what's trying to put standards from top down. It doesn't work that way. If I'm a business and I have some kind of thing that I'm doing on chain that is economically viable and for a longer period of time, I'm going to develop my own protocol. I might or might not open source that. If I would open source that, and I would have enough economic activity going on that'll automatically attract other builders, because you know you want to use a protocol that's already in use by other people if it has enough traction. But I don't think we're going to get to a world where there is a single protocol for something. I think we're going to have a mishmash of protocols. Some will work together, others won't work together. I think the economic incentives are such that they push more towards a generalized protocols. And I think for most use cases over time, those will emerge out of themselves. But we'll always have very niche specific cases where the protocol is developed by some company internally. It's only being used by the company internally. They're basically doing the same thing maybe as Ordinals are doing, but they just don't want to use Ordinals. They want to use their own thing.
Right.
So I think that's more a plausible way of how the future is going to look like on Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I totally agree too. Like private company.
Why are we doing this? We're only agreeing. Like,
right. For sure. We should we should do one on your channel where we just argue about stuff that we disagree on.
Man, watch out because we might end up fighting. You know.
that's fine. I fight for fun. This is how I make my friends.
Honestly, it's the same for me. Like. There's one guy that I really consider a friend in the Bitcoin sphere. Yeah. That's Dean. And the first time that I met Dean, we ran into an argument. It was about Bitcoin, and it got so heated we were literally about to throw punches. If it wasn't for some girls that were holding me back and holding him back, like we were literally to fight. But now, like I consider a real friend. Like I like to talk about personal stuff. It's definitely a great way to test a man's character is try and fight him, and if he doesn't fight back, it's a pussy. Forget about it.
Right? No, it's a good way to make friends for sure.
Yeah, I mean, good friends at least.
Me and Dean are tight too. We're the same thing. Like we argue about stuff. Like I've never gotten in his face and. Person, but that's also fun.
I mean you're way bigger than him though. That wouldn't be fair.
No, I'm quite a big guy.
Yeah. That surprised me actually the first time that I saw it. I was like, oh, Critter's actually bigger than I thought. Like, what are you, that's, like 6'2", 6'3", something?
I'm like about 6'3", like yeah. 200.
I'm 6'2", you were like taller than me. I'm like,
what? Yeah. No, I get that all the time. Every time people come see me for the first time, they're like, wow, you're big, because I'm not just tall. Like yeah. I'm also just, I'm a big guy. I lift
exactly
three, 4 days a week. I've been a combat athlete for like 15 years. So
right.
There's a lot of me. And plus I'm a little overweight. So there's, you know, there's a lot of me.
You do have a little bit of a high body fat percentage. Right? You should look a little bit like, it's just not healthy at some point. I'm not sure if you're at that point, but like I'm talking about, it's more actually like me projecting this onto you, because that's something that I definitely spend a lot of time on is making sure that I'm eating healthy and I'm moving enough and I also still do fun things. I mean, what did you say? My Instagram looked like an ad for whiskey and cigarettes.
cigars and something like that. You have like a classic like Instagram influencer profile for sure.
It's just because I dated like influencer girls and they basically handed that for me because I'm not that aesthetically expert in those kinds of things. My thing. It looks like it is, but it's really not.
No, right. Well, you're doing a hell of a good job of it. So let's bang out a few more questions. We got like 6.5 minutes left. Well, here we go. Which industry will blockchain best disrupt?
I think the best use cases for blockchain technology are in regulations, just complying to regulations, and also making sure that certain regulations are followed. So the checking factor of it. I think blockchain makes that really, really easy, and it's really appealing to do something in that sector because it's a market that's created by government. So like you have no choice at some point to be compliant as a company. And I think there are a lot of legal processes that would greatly benefit from being digitized, firstly, because they're still like very, very much analog, and secondly, being on chain. I think that's a huge market. I think that's where you'll directly see a lot of disruption.
Any more questions, Mr. Moon? I'd love to talk to Ari about filling bits as we close out here. What happened with your role at the Venture Studio?
Venture Studio was, you know, there was a lot of reorganization going on when it comes to the dojo. The dojo was a large shareholder of the studio. At some point, the studio apparently didn't meet expectations and didn't receive any further funding. My job was director of research and development, so I was developing all kinds of concepts and working with the customers that we did have to actually bring these concepts to life. But yeah, at some point, if there are no customers and there's no further funding, then that basically ends, because you know I'm willing to work for free to a certain degree. And currently, I think Osman is still doing something in that area. But yeah, I'm no longer involved in that.
Let's see. Well, let's talk a little bit about filling bits. So we've seen some of your clips, which I love. I love the stark cutoff. So it's just you talking, and then it just cuts to the elevator music and the logo. Like I don't even care what you're talking about. Just the cut makes it funny. So, are you doing this all yourself? Like how much legs does this have? Are you going to be, you know, how much are you putting into this? Like, what's your team? Is it all Ari? Let me know.
No, it started as all Ari. So the first video was literally me just having an idea of like, you know what, I'm going to do my own projects and just going to see how it goes. I'm going to call up some people, see what they're up to, and just go from there. But I put up that video and I got like 9 proposals from different people of like, hey, I'm working on this. Can you help me out with this? And yeah, I could like pick and choose. So I chose one that I really believed in could be something. So I'm investing in that. And a different thing that a different team is working on that we're starting from the ground up. So basically that's what I'm doing. I'm just starting up a few projects myself. One of them is something that already existed or to some degree existed, and I'm investing in that. And the other one is I'm building it up from the ground up.
Yeah,
and I'm documenting the whole thing. So that's sure. or the whole thing. I'm trying to document as much as possible, but it's, you know, it's awkward having that camera in my face, man. It's not like I'm not used to it.
Well, you're good at it. I enjoy your content, and it really, it's just if you're good at talking, you're good on media, right? So obviously, right. There's a million things with like lighting and all the other stuff to make a video production better.
Right, but now, like.
Well, that's so
I'm moving around to like try to hide it.
I'm balder than you, but you can see I have not a lot of reflection. It's powder, just light powder. That's all you need, and it just really? Makes you look yes. Just flesh tone, light powder. It takes 2 seconds. I'll do it, and I only do it if I'm like, you know, sweaty or whatever, and I'm like, ah, shoot.
Yeah,
you know,
but like, you get sweaty anyway. Like, talking, you kind of get, at least like for me, when I talk, like I start actually like getting physically excited. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely start sweating.
No, and then just a lot of little things. There's a million little details for like microphone placement and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I'm getting a lot of flack of like my setup. It's like people think like, oh, like you're too poor for a plan. Some people were like, oh, you're like a maniac or psychopath. Like it looks like an asylum. Like what kind of crazy house is that where you're in? I don't know. Right. I don't know what people are like. What the fuck are you looking at? Just listen to what the fuck I'm saying. Like, how is this kind of distracting you from what I'm saying? There's literally nothing here. Like, come on.
Yep. No, for sure. So, all right, man, good stuff. We're like 90 seconds off from being done here. Is there anything else you want to call out? Like, where can we follow you? Where can we learn more? What do you wish we could have said?
One thing that I would appreciate some help on is because I haven't been active on Twitter for a long time, so I kind of feel like I'm shadow banned or something like that because like for 2 hours, shit is up, and then I have like 150 views or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna put up a tweet right now, actually. And I hope people are actually going to do this. Let me see. So I'm going to put up the tweet that you can help me get out of Twitter jail by liking the tweet, by retweeting it, and by replying your BSV address, and you'll get $1 in BSV if you do that.
Oh.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's pretty damn good right
but
there.
There is a but. You need to have a verified account because fuck you cartoons.
All right, good stuff, man. All right, cool. Yeah,
the tweet is up, so guys, I hope you guys help me out because like it's terrible. I'm putting all of this effort in. Come on.
is it Ari _ off chain or what is the handle?
I think that's the thing. Yeah, Ari _ off chain. Yeah, that's my Twitter handle.
Good stuff. Ari, thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing you again in person sometime soon. Yeah, be well, man. My friend.
Thanks a lot, Kurt.
All right, see ya. All right, everybody. So that was Ari Kuchi, the man in Bitcoin with the funnest name to say. And yeah, you good stuff. I can see also that the troll box is getting real fun and spicy. Everybody's having a good time bickering about whether or not, well, I'm seeing, okay, whether or not Enchain, I'm going to address it because Monkey Paws thinks I won't address it. So I'm going to say it real quick. Let's find it. Let's pull it up. Let's pull it up, Mr. Moon. Put it on screen. We will talk about anything on CoinGeek Weekly live stream. All right. So, Kurt, from my perspective, do you believe it's a fair characterization of Enchain to say they are effectively the block stream of BSV? So it's funny. Let's analyze their names for a second. Blockstream, which is, you know, blocking the stream of Bitcoin. Okay, so that's a fun one. And then Enchain, which you could call like Enchain or like to chain a person, right? So both are a little bit dark if you think about it. But okay, so my criticisms of Blockstream. Oh, okay, now I see Monkey Paws saying it wasn't addressed to me. It was addressed to Ari. So sorry. All right, so I'm going to answer it anyways. I think the biggest difference between Enchain and Blockstream is the fact that Blockstream and the things that they have done have specifically slowed down Bitcoin under the premise that Bitcoin was supposed to be something that it wasn't. And we've seen Blockstream's ideology sort of implanted onto Bitcoin BTC as the official version of what Bitcoin is supposed to be. And I think that is sad in a lot of ways because it is bleak and it's narrow. And ultimately, it's been a huge impediment to Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is in a much worse place because Blockstream's ideas have become the popular ideas about Bitcoin globally. In stark contrast, Enchain, which predates the BSV and BCH eras by many years, actually, has been doing research and development into how to scale Bitcoin, how to make Bitcoin something that is a creator of abundance globally since like 2015, if I recall, which around the same time that Blockstream started to become a significant entity in the space. So my problems consistently with Enchain are not anything about vision or any of that. I actually think the vision of Enchain, the pitch deck version of Enchain is great. Now, there are a million things you could say about, you know, operationally or this CEO's era might not have been good because or whatever else. But ultimately, Enchain sees Bitcoin as a way to make the world a better place by people using Bitcoin for the things that it's uniquely good at. Now, I think Blockstream also sort of pays that lip service, but at the same time, they're undermining all of Bitcoin's capabilities as literally their official roadmap. And so I think they're very, very different. Now, sure, you can say that, are they the major firm in their respective Bitcoin adjacent camps? Like, sure. But look at the CEO. So you got the CEO of Blockstream is Adam Back, who is, in my opinion, mostly a puppet. He doesn't strike me as the kind of person that has any of the qualities of a good CEO. He's a technocrat and a coder, really, which I'm sure he's great at. But how did he turn Enchain into a last I checked, they were like a $4.x billion company, almost entirely out of VC money. Now, on the flip side, you have Enchain, which has Kristen Ager Hansen as the CEO currently. And he does have major CEO vibes. Like if you look into what should a real tech CEO look like, it should be constantly trying to raise capital, constantly trying to get out there and make partnerships and push that narrative. I see Alex Vidal saying you meant Blockstream. I may have screwed this up. Yeah, Blockstream has Adam Back, who is the quiet coder. And then Enchain has a guy like Kristen Ager Hansen, who is a consummate businessman. Now, again, love him or hate him, he's out there doing what a CEO of a tech company arguably should do, which is to be the face of the company, to manage the company, to market and sale. Like, he's the kind of chief of everything. He's the chief executive officer. So I think in a very, very basic sense, like, sure, they occupy the same space, one side in BSV and one side in BTC, but ultimately, the way that they go about it, what they do with their position and all that kind of thing is completely different. One is also, done a lot, even though it's unpopular and stayed very on task. Meanwhile, Blockstream has benefited from being extremely popular, despite the fact that they haven't actually delivered anything that anybody uses. So, Monkey Paw, I see more follow-up questions from Monkey Paws. So, we're not going to turn this into a whole bunch more time discussing the issue. But if you are interested, I would happily have a discussion about it if you want to schedule it and do it on another live stream, because I think that would be a lot of fun. So, or maybe we can do spaces. We do we do CoinGeek Spaces on Fridays, actually. So maybe connect with Alex Vidal and we can do a spaces with this as a topic. So that would be cool. Anyways, now we're 6 minutes over. I'm Kurt Wooker Jr. I would really like to have a glass of water and enjoy the rest of my afternoon. So for real though, Alex Vidal, I know you're watching. So get in touch with Monkey Paws over here. See if we can put together a spaces. Maybe we can do one right now. I think that would be a good use of everybody's time. So I'm going to rock and roll, everybody. Thank you for watching. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Ari. Thank you to Alex Moon, all the people at CoinGeek, all of our advertisers, and everybody else for doing the stuff that you do that makes this possible. I am really, really happy to be able to spend 1 hour and 6 minutes with you here on the CoinGeek Weekly live stream at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every single Tuesday. People, thank you. Please like, subscribe, hit the alert bell, and do not forget to be good to each other. Goodbye.
I know that there is a very passionate community behind this technology. Us stepping in, me personally, representing IBM, I'm a bit more withdrawn from that discussion. We really just are looking to solve our clients' problem. But that right. leaves us an open mind to really assess the technical capabilities of this technology. And we all looked at this technology together and we assessed it from many different angles, and we feel that it offers a very good fit for enterprise use cases.
BuyBSV.com, a quick and simple way to buy Bitcoin SV. It does exactly what it says.